flirts with being interesting, but I checked out after the 90-minute mark with nearly an hour to go. Amen. That's writing in Simon Palai of CTV's Your Morning. Yeah, CTV, a little shout to Canadian television. Well done by Cody. We're talking about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. That's our new movie this week. Our old movie is Kingpin. Wanted to do it last week, then I remembered it was Pacino's birthday. Had to do Serpico. Couldn't let my boy Cody down, so Kingpin this week, which is a fantastic comedy. And our wild card is Sonny Vaccaro. That's right. Matt Damon plays him in the movie Air, which is on Amazon Prime this Friday, May 12th. And Sonny's got great stories. Again, if you're a sports fan, you know how important he is with regards to basketball, challenging the NCAA, etc. But he's also got stories about, you know, getting the call from Matt Damon. And actually, initially, was supposed to be played by James Gandolfini, which was the biggest thing that I knew about Sonny Vaccaro. And we started with that. So it's a pretty cool interview I think you'll all enjoy with Sonny Vaccaro.
I think my way to tease that interview is... Yeah. I didn't tell you this till right now. I got a text after that from Sonny's rep saying how much he enjoyed your conversation and how he, because at the end, little spoiler alert, you guys say about, oh, we got to have you back to talk this.
Yeah.
And she's like, he really wants to do that. So,
oh, dude, that's awesome. Yeah, that's so nice. Yeah. That's a very genuine compliment. You're right. Normally they say, yeah, we'll definitely get together, and they never want to. So the fact he actually followed up and
she's
said
like,
that.
He asked great questions. Like, Sonny really liked it. So that's a little
fantastic.
Teaser.
I pulled the double book, so he's going to be on MLB Network Tuesday night.
Oh, you've been pulling that out a lot. You had Ray Romano, Yogi Berra's granddaughter.
Granddaughter, Lindsay, yeah.
And now
George
guy.
Tillman Jr., director of George Foreman, which, by the way, my brother, thankfully, I don't know if you probably know how to do this. My brother had texted me and goes, hey, you're on IMDb now. I'm like, great. For those who don't know, Internet Movie Database. Again, for those who don't know,
I
expect you to listen every episode. I play an announcer in Big George Foreman. Me and Robert Flores call Rumble in the Jungle. So my brother says, you're on IMDb. I'm like, oh, it's awesome. He goes, you should update your Wikipedia page. And I said, I have no idea how to do that. He goes, I'll do it for you. And even if I did know how to do it, that seems a little embarrassing. It's a little look at me, Louie, if I'm updating my Wikipedia page. So my brother went to my Wikipedia page. He added a section. I think it's like silver screen. And he puts, Virk made his debut, calling Rumble in the Jungle. He also said, there's no mention of NHL Network. You know, you're a hockey guy. You put an NHL Network. I said, I no longer work at DAZN, so I'll clean that up. Like, it was amazing. My brother just edited my Wikipedia page for me. Looks fantastic now.
I tried once to edit. There's like a famous, my high school has a Wikipedia page for famous alumni. And I added my, jokingly, sarcastically, yeah. I put myself on there once, like, you know, radio personality Chris Cody, and then I was gone like a week later. So like the way it works is like you can add to Wikipedia, but then there's some sort of process where it can get, I don't know how that really works, but I tried to do that once and then it was removed. But I'm looking here, you have three actor roles on your IMDb. you're Big George Foreman.
Yep.
Something from 2003 called Bollywood Boulevard.
So that's my first television show I ever worked on. It's not a movie show, but I guess because it's about movies, they count it.
Yeah.
It'd be like, if you know, like Cinephile should be on there then by that virtue. It's a podcast of movies. But yeah, it was a TV show, but Indian movies, Bollywood Boulevard. What's the third one?
7 episodes, WWE Raw.
It is sports entertainment. Yeah. Okay, that's great. So I am on IMDb. That's
there
fantastic.
Also, there is something here for ESPN Major League Baseball 17 to 18, 2 episodes. TV series or something? I don't know.
It's, that's very bizarre. No, I mean, I was called some games, obviously in studio, as you know, but it wasn't specific
part
to
of
movies.
The ERA? I don't know. This is weird.
Oh, that's very hard.
It's you, Alex Rodriguez, Eduardo Perez, and Jessica Mendoza. Anyways.
I mean, we worked on the wild card together.
Maybe MLB baseball, whatever. But yeah,
you
got an IMDb. This is cool.
I'm thrilled I'm on IMDb. That's great. The next step, of course, is getting a Rotten Tomatoes, which we've talked to Mark Ellis about it before. There's some sort of process you have to go through. And I'm like, come on, can't you just put us up there? Like, figure it out. But we'll figure that out at some point. The Wikipedia, though, can you just quickly on the fly check out the Wikipedia, see if that is still up there? Because I'll tell you one thing. To your point about adding things, I couldn't believe Michael Landsberg was a very smart guy, great guy, longtime Canadian broadcaster. I was once on his radio show, and he said to me, on your Wikipedia, it says you're a below-average track star in Kingston. And I said, think about what you just said. A below average track star. Obviously, that's made up. I've never ran track in my life. How exactly could one be a below average track star? Either you would be a track star or you're below average and ran track. And no, I didn't run track. So then I think at that time, my brother updated it. I said, no, I played basketball. I played soccer in high school.
Your brother did. Like, so your brother put silver screen debut and stuff.
Yeah, he cleaned this whole thing up. Yeah, amazing.
I see it here. I see WWE. I see DAZN, MLB Network, ESPN. Yeah. And then at the bottom, most recent silver screen debut. I see it. It's here. And you got personal life, too. I mean, they have 4 sons. Your wife's on here. Wow, this is...
Because I'm telling you, man, there's people who don't know anything about me. They're going to check my Wikipedia page. So I can tell my brother, it's very important.
He lives in New Jersey. I mean, look at you.
Just now, you could add some other stuff. Put some more cinephile stuff.
We got to add some controversies. That's my favorite when you get to the like, down at the bottom, controversies. Yeah. But they're not. There's no controversies for you here. So
we can add a couple on the way, make things spicy. No controversy right now when it comes to the Florida Panthers. I'm thrilled for Cody's team. I saw Bill Lindsay, who's a former Panther. I saw him in the hallway the other day, and we just started talking. He goes, this is so great. We beat the Bruins, who everybody hates, unless you're a Bruins fan. And now we're about to beat the Leafs. It's so fantastic. I said, yeah. And then he had to pause for a second. He was like, you're not. I go, no, dude. I've told you this before. I was born in Toronto. I'm a Flyers fan. Love Ron Hextall. He said, no, I remember it. Because you were so happy the Leafs are losing. I just had to double check for myself. I knew you're not a Leafs fan. I just wasn't sure. I go, yeah. Flyers, Hextall. Talk it. He's like, yeah. And I go, think how important this is. I go, Billy, I was like 7 and I chose the Flyers. Since then, the Flyers have been in 3 Stanley Cup finals. They're in 87, 97, 2010. Of course, I've lost all 3. But the amount of Leaf fans around me, like, and I started to get scared, Cody. I'm like, hang on a second. They finally won this round. It's been 19 years since they won. What if this is their year? What if this is the year of destiny? Even just getting to a cup final, I couldn't take.
We got you, Adnan.
Like, before it even got stressful, the Panthers were like, we got you. Like, don't even, dude, they won one round.
That's okay. So wild. That game 3, overtime, up 2-0, you either take a commanding lead or they are right back in it. If they get a goal and it's 2-1, I feel like we might lose the series. Like, it was just, God, what a huge goal. What a play from Reinhardt. Oh.
Well, there's a terrific article. So I have a couple friends in a text chain, fellow Leaf haters. My one buddy's a Sabres fan. My other buddy just hates hockey. And he just lives in Toronto because this is awful, all these goddamn Leaf fans. So we're on a text chain. There's actually an article about like people cheering against the Leafs. Like people in Toronto wearing Panthers jerseys, not from Florida, but just cheering against the Leafs.
I saw those two fans. And there was also a couple Canadian fans that flew in. I saw it. They had a sign. Tickets this much, flight this much, watching the Leafs lose, priceless. Yes. And it's just like these people, these poor, sad Montreal Canadian fans flew all the way down just to watch the Leafs lose. I love that.
The amount of schadenfreude is just fantastic. It's like I said years ago, before the Eagles won the Super Bowl, I said, I don't know if I love the Eagles more or I hate the Cowboys more. Yeah. Like it really is that passion versus love, and obviously we're feeling it right now. But most importantly, I get to support my guys, so you and Roy are fired up, and Mike Ryan, the whole crew. Dude, like this is conference finals now. You're a season ticket holder. You went to the game three.
Yeah.
And as you said, I'm like, if the Leafs win game 3, oh, God, and all of a sudden game 4 ties. Now it's over, whether or not it's a sweep or 5 games, whatever. Are you going to try to get tickets for the conference finals? How does that work?
I'm a season ticket holder. I get an email that's just, you want them, and I get a yeah. Like, I just have to send an email that's like, I'm in. Like, I'm going to all the home games the rest of the way.
Dude, that's sick.
The question is, Mike Ryan and I have been talking. Like, I might be traveling for, like, next round. I was thinking of doing Toronto, but I was like, you know what? I went to Toronto earlier this year.
True.
So I'm gonna just sit, wait to the next series. The next one might be Carolina, so that'd be a little closer.
We could have Chris Cody over at the house. Could be Jersey. Jersey won 8-4 game 3. It could be Devils Panthers.
Dude, I'm coming over for dinner.
I love it. Chris, your open invite. Come over to the house. Hohokus, New Jersey. Cody's coming over. We're going to watch hockey together. It's going to be fantastic.
Yes.
Boys, I love you. And if it's Carolina, I don't know. Darinoka. I'll tell Darinoka. Have you over to the house. No problem.
Great
SEC
voice.
Network.
Top 5 voice from that guy. I love that guy's voice.
He does have a great voice. Darian Mel, I believe, is the longest running radio show on ESPN Radio, which is kind of crazy.
And they've always been on weekends. It gets overshadowed because it's on the weekends, but it is.
Right.
It's like every Saturday. You need it, throw it on. They're there.
Fantastic show. Also, shout out to Stu Gotts and company. I'm halfway through. It's him, Billy, and Mike. I talked to my man, Michael Lombardi, my old partner from GM Shuffle. We did over 100 episodes together. So Mike was on with Stu talking football. Of course, fantastic interview. I haven't listened to all of it yet, but listen to the latest God Bless Football. They actually went 5-minute baseball talk because Mike had a Yankees hat, did a little Yankee Marlin conversation. But love hearing Lombardi in the Meadowlark family. If only me and Lombardi could have done GM Shuffle for the Meadowlark family. Mm. But Mike is on with Stu Gotts, so make sure you check that out. All right, let's talk a little movies. Before we do, actually, one of the pet peeves, because people seem to enjoy the shopping story last week. This is very quick. Are you a coffee drinker?
No, actually.
I love that you're not.
I'll do a Cuban coffee if I'm really tired, but no.
Coffee, I have no issue.
But never.
Here's my
regular
issue with coffee. I mean, there's a lot of issues with coffee. One of them is just, it's so expensive. Everyone's so foo-foo about it. I got to go to Starbucks. I got this latte, this chai special.
$9
for it. Exactly. Like, it's just, it's nauseating. But here's my biggest issue. And I saw this the other day when I was talking to somebody. It's when the people drink coffee. Again, I drink water. If I need a little, you know, I'll have a little Pepsi here and there. But when you drink water, I just drink the water. When coffee people drink, first off, they squint their eyes and they do the. They slurp. It's the slurp and the ah. And I'm like, I don't do that when I drink water. I just drink the water. If I drink a Pepsi, I got no issues. But every time someone drinks, every time they look at you, they go, like, I don't need you savoring your damn coffee.
Now, I'm trying to think back. If you would have said to me before this, without giving me any context of coffee, what drink makes people do the, I would have thought. excuse me, as I burp, I would have thought that it was either like soda or beer. Like the carbonation is what I thought gave out the
Yeah.
But I've never even noticed. I don't. My dad is very annoying with coffee. I'm with you. My wife can't like live without like if we go 2 hours.
Go have my cup of Joe.
If we go out 2 hours without coffee, she starts getting headaches and starts getting mad at everybody. So it's like coffee's a nuisance to me. I'm with you, but I've never noticed that coffee makes people go. I'm gonna have to pay attention to this now.
Yeah, because the soda and beer, you might get a belch, which I have no issue with. That's kind of fun. Like, you know, eating a pizza, you're at a ball game, whatever it is. But the coffee, it's just it gives you that, and I go, I don't need it. It's the slurp
and the squinting of the eyes, too.
And the squinting, it's three things. It's the squint of the eyes because it's too hot for them. It's the sip and then the, I don't need it.
What setting are you most annoyed by this? Is this like at work with coworkers? Is this like, you know, your wife on
like
the weekends?
I don't like the coworker comes in with a thermos. Because then again, it goes back to your wife's point about, I can't go 2 hours without my coffee.
Yeah.
They got their thermos everywhere they go. The most important thing is their thermos.
It's going to be hot for the whole day. It's like, I don't care.
I feel like there's going to be a lot of backlash on this. I think there's a lot of coffee drinkers out there, but I love the fact you and I are not. I had no idea. I'm like, I don't think Cody's a coffee drinker. That was my guess. I knew you wouldn't be.
Let's become the anti-coffee podcast. There aren't a lot of them out there that we might actually, let's pivot from even Cinephile maybe. We'll be partly a movie podcast, but mostly we are just the anti-coffee podcast.
Right. Because you think of coffee, always think of morning brew. We'll be morning screw. As in screw you, morning brew. Just, we hate coffee.
Morning,
we're here
go
for the morning
yourself.
Screw.
Yeah.
Morning screw yourself. That's our new idea. I got a text from my buddy Carlton Gillespie who wanted to know if I'm going to jump into the writer's strike. And then Bimmel, our man Bimmel, sent me a message about Richard Dreyfuss. I'll do them both real quick. I wrote back to Carlton. I said, it sucks, but nothing for me to add. What do you want me to say? There's a writer's strike right now. Yeah, like there's a lot of content not being done. The late night shows are being impacted. It sucks. I hope they get resolved soon. Hope the writers get paid. Like whenever there's a strike, Cody, I'm like, I don't really, if you want me to take a side, sure, I'm on the writer's side. Like I just want it to be over. I want my TV.
I was a little torn because you see like the Levitard show had a writer on and then he gave out his Venmo and we like got some random writer for the Bear that was like, you know, having to do Uber on the side, got him like 20K just instantly overnight. So it's like,
crazy.
It's a cool moving thing, but it's also like, I'm sure there are industries out there that are, it's kind of like first world problems a little bit. Like, I feel like show writers are not the most
destitute.
I don't want to be coming out against, like, these writers deserve, they're asking.
We support Mike, sure. I saw Mike had a statement. It was very important what he was saying.
And they're asking for such a small piece of this gigantic pie that all these studios and networks make. So I'm not coming out anti this writers thing, but it is just, it seems like we're just cherry picking one. There's a lot of like teachers are underpaid, like construction work.
Pay the
like,
teachers.
You know what I mean? So it's like, I feel like there are a lot of industries out there and we're just like taking the shiny one, like, TV and stuff. Like, I don't know. It felt a little weird.
I hear you saying, I totally understand. It's not like when I see like subway workers on strike, I'm like, they're not making a ton of money. They need to make a check.
Right.
Garbage, like sanitation. I'm like, that's a crappy job. Right. But wait, so the writers, I'm like, you guys are in your air conditioned offices making pretty good money, just making up stories and you're feeling like you're being screwed. I totally get it. I'm on your side.
Right.
Yes. And I get it. It's just like with baseball, right? People go, I can't believe that guy, Stanton, makes $325 million. Yeah, but the owners make billions. So that's the whole point. If the pie is this big, we just want a piece of the pie. If it's a big pie, we want more of the pie.
I'm pro everything. I'm pro writing. All right. I don't want these articles coming out. Now we're the anti coffee and oddly, we've become the anti writing strike podcast.
Yeah.
So this is a little odd that we've,
We're just trying up new things here.
Love writers.
Bimmel sent me the article. I don't really want to get into it because it's just bizarre. Richard Dreyfuss had a comment in which he was upset about somebody asked him on PBS, what do you think of the new rules? Basically, the Oscars are having new rules for inclusion and diversity. It says, it makes me want to vomit. And he said, am I led to believe that art is not for art's sake? And the specific quote he said is, because Othello, Laurence Olivier played Othello. For those who don't know, Shakespearean character was black. And Dreyfuss said, you know, can I not play Othello? Can a gay character not play this or whatever? So people are crushing Richard Dreyfuss saying, like, if you want to play a black character, you can go ahead. Blackface just isn't cool, but if you want to do that, great. You still might get nominated for an Oscar. But the point is, you can't be a jerk about it. We're just trying to be inclusive. And specifically, and again, you'll have to go in to read all this stuff. It's not like any movie that wins Best Picture has to have a black subject matter and a black director and an Asian star. Like, that's not what it is. If you look at the rules, a lot of films that have won Best Picture, I believe the article said virtually every film that has won Best Picture would still have won Best Picture. They just want a little bit more representation. But Richard Dreyfuss filed under the just grouchy old man.
Yeah,
like, old white guy getting angry. Like, dude.
Just tell your wife this stuff. All right, bud? Like, we don't need this. Like, he's just like, someone needs to, I need a writer. I got to get this out. Someone needs to hear this. It's like, dude, just tell your wife.
Just take a knee, Richard. Goodbye, girl. Great movie. Jaws. What about Bob? Like, he's made some really good movies. Let's
let
focus
it ride.
On that. Let it ride. Let's do that. Right?
I love that movie. That's my gambler in me.
Let's talk a little movies here. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. The first one was fantastic. Fun, irreverent, silly. You got a guy who's a giant tree named Groot. All he says is, I am Groot. You have the always likable Chris Pratt. You got Bradley Cooper. Don't call me a raccoon. He's playing Rocket. You got Dave Bautista's all jacked up. Vin Diesel, by the way, playing Groot. The first one, like I said, was fun, irreverent, different, really funny. Really enjoyed it. Second one, it was all right. Not as strong, but okay, fine. Now the third one comes out. I already had low expectations, and I was disappointed. Here's the story. Still reeling from the loss of Gamora, Peter Quill rallies his team to defend the universe and one of their own, a mission that could mean the end of the Guardians, if not successful. Written and directed by James Gunn, I just found it tedious. This is one of those movies, as the review said, 90 minutes in, I'm like, oh my God, there's still another hour to go. Even my six-year-old son was strange to me. How much more is left? This is a very long movie. Normally, kids are placated by the popcorn and slushy. Again, if you want the towel, this time we're looking at $92, $34 for a large popcorn and four slushies, $58 for admission. Thank God I went on a Saturday matinee. $92 to watch Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, and this is just another example of the fact, Cody, if you ever get to a third movie, it's not going to be good, right? Yeah. Back to Future 3, Godfather 3, doesn't matter. If you get to a third one, they're just doing it for the money, and I get that, but don't try to tell me it's a good movie, because it's not. It's repetitive, it's tiresome, it's recycled, and I thought it was a bore. And even one of the things that I loved about the original, remember, was the music. Great soundtrack, 70s soul. This time, even the soundtrack wasn't that good. This time, you got Florence and the Machine, The Dog Days Are Over. That's like the big hit song here. Like that already was a hit. This wasn't exactly like a classic soul song. So I was really disappointed by the movie. I know it made $107 million, and I'm sure there'll be a Guardians of the Galaxy 4. But I wasn't crazy about it. You thought about going to catch a morning matinee. Thankfully, did not.
Well, this morning, yeah, I was going to, you know, like I watched Kingpin that we're going to talk about in a little bit. And I'm trying to see these movies. And, yeah, the time didn't work out, so I didn't do it. But luckily, like you said, it's just that's disappointing, man. But what are you going to do? They got to make their money, right? I mean, should they not? Like, you know, these big Marvel hits, like they're monsters now. Like they're just going to keep doing it. Like they're not going to stop because they make money. And it's just we're going to have to just you live with the first one and then you just don't even worry about the next ones.
I think you're right. You just have to accept it, because if you get mad about it, you're just shaking your fist at the sky. Like you said, it's a commercial product. They're making money. But don't tell me it's a good movie. We all know that. They're doing it for the money. And
we get it. Chris Pratt likes music. I mean, geez.
Yeah. Adam Kempinar of Film Spotting. Mercifully, Gunn gives us a phase, whatever Marvel movie that is self-contained, more GCU than MCU. Another review here, underwhelming Volume 2 in 2017. James Gunn created a singular band of eccentric misfits who inject a shot of buoyancy and joy into the superhero genre, but this time it's pretty much what it is. Exactly. Guardians of the Galaxy 3. I'll give it 1.5 Maple Leafs. I didn't like it at all. Do you want to do Kingpin or you want to get to Sonny Vaccaro first? Your
Let's
choice.
Go to Sonny.
All right, Sonny right now, special guest. He's awesome. Well, it's a real pleasure bringing Sonny Vaccaro right now, a basketball legend and the source of the movie Air. Of course, Matt Damon plays him in the film, which will be available on Amazon Prime on May 12th. Sonny, it's great to see you. I remember years ago, because I'm such a huge James Gandolfini fan, reading that he was going to play you in a film. And I went back and read the article in 2007. It said you guys met and Gandolfini said to you, you know, I only play conflicted characters. And you said to him, Jimmy, I've been conflicted my whole life. What was that conversation like with Gandolfini?
Oh my God, wonderful. Yes, I'll never ever forget it. Obviously, Jimmy at that time, you know, unfortunately not here anymore, you know, was sort of, you know, the Sopranos. He was like every Italian's idol, right? I mean, at that point in time. And I know exactly what he said, and I know exactly my answer. I have been conflicted all my life, and he laughed, and I laughed, and I don't think the other people sitting at the table really knew why we were laughing.
Yeah, it's amazing because it's one of the first things I had this image of Gandolfini playing you. I didn't know what you looked like. So when I'm watching Air, and I thought it was fabulous, I think it's one of the best films of the year. That and John Wick 4 are both tremendous. But I kept thinking, wow, it's such a big difference between James Gandolfini and Matt Damon. Like, I can't imagine what it would have been like Gandolfini playing you. Did you have any concept of what that would have been like?
Yeah, I did. I think it would have been more understandable if we would have done it was about my camp, the ABCD camp, and it was, you know, centered on that. I just think at that time when Sopranos was owned the world, I mean, I don't think how it could have missed, to be honest with you, because that's why it missed, because Jim and the people who were writing the script wanted to exaggerate a little bit, you know, just like the Sopranos, like they wanted to make it their story in a sense. But I think that Cam story with Gandolfini and the rest of the cast that they were, you know, going to put in would have been a hit because ABC Camp was that big at that time. Certainly not as big as the Jordan story we're telling now.
Yeah. All right, let's get into Air. I think it's a remarkable movie, and one of the things that impresses me most about it is that Ben Affleck's able to take Nike, which is this monolithic corporation, and they're a modern-day Goliath, and he turns them into David. Can you just explain to us what it was like at that time, how Nike felt like they also ran to Adidas and Reebok and really was a true underdog story, what you were able to do landing Jordan?
Well, if we don't land Jordan, there's no probably Nike. It'd be like Under Armour or something. I mean, they would have been, you know, if Phil's a bright man, he would have made money for sure. But that was the last will and testament because what they obviously showed to the public was our athletes are more important than the product. By that, I mean, they are the people advertising the Cheerios on the box top. That's why they're on there and the Wheaties and all that. And we were down to nothing. And if we don't hit the gold mine, I believe, I don't know, you know, they could have their own thing 40 years later. It would have not been what we're talking about. It changed the world of marketing, what that movie did. But it also made Nike the biggest they could possibly be into eternity with involved with shoes. That's how important that this movie is. The world basically changed. And people today take it for granted. They think it was that way all the time. And all the new people who buy the Jordans, you know, weren't born when we did that. But you're still selling them. And they'll sell them into infinity, eternity, whatever that word is, forever.
The Sonny Vaccaro in the movie is portrayed as a guy who has a lot of chutzpah. He's a guy who's a basketball lifer. He lives, eats, breathes basketball. And yet he's taking a considerable risk here by betting on Jordan. I believe it's $250,000 is the budget being allocated, and Phil Knight's telling him spend it on three guys. And your character, who was playing you, Matt Damon, saying, no, it's all going to be on Jordan. And there's a great scene where they show the winning shot, and they say, that's what it's about. Look at Jordan, look at his eyes, look at his body language. He wasn't fearful. He wasn't intimidated. Did that actually happen? Is that what sold you on Jordan, watching that shot frame by frame?
We watched the shot later, okay? But the real image I had, I was at that game in 1982. I was in the stands. They were playing Georgetown, which at that time was one of our key. We were selling colleges, and the college teams were putting those shoes on the college players. That was my idea to firm. Pay the coaches, the kids will wear them. Now I'm at this game. Michael hits that shot. I didn't give a damn about Michael Jordan. I never met him. He didn't play in the Dapper Dan. I didn't know Dean Smith, and they wore Converse. All I remembered, my psychology and my, and this is what people have told me, you know, in the intervening years, that I had this image about this kid. So when it came time to ask me this fateful question, I didn't say Michael Jordan when they asked me for my vote. I said, give it to the kid. And so what happened that day is unexplainable. But what Matt Damon did in showing the film, he was able to show it to the public forever, what was in my mind for 18 seconds, because that's what that film was. And Matt explained it. It got me off the hook. As they told me, Sonny, the 2.5 minutes we take to show this film will make it live forever. If I just would have said, well, I remember that shot, he beat Georgetown, I'm pissed off. That's, you know, what happened. So that was the turning point in my life going forward. If I screw up or if they don't listen to me, or what if I don't say Jordan? What if I put Jordan in with 10 other guys like other people? The world would have changed.
It's amazing, too. Like, you see Jason Bateman going over some names. How about John Stockton from Gonzaga? Where's Gonzaga? Of course, we know Gonzaga has now become this mid-major that's a real powerhouse. We know Stockton's career. But again, it just shows how little was known at that time. Like, at one point, Phil Knight makes a comment about how the NBA Finals were on tape delay. Like, it's crazy to think now I'm watching Curry and LeBron, and everyone is aware of what's at stake in the NBA playoffs. And yet, at that time, you really had to hunt for talent. A guy like you was, like, really trying to grind to determine who the best players were.
And I started with the Dapper Dan. I mean, I was 24 years old when we started, Pat DeCito and I started the Dapper Dan Club. I didn't know all those kids in 1964. I was reading books. I was doing all these things. I didn't go out and see kids until maybe 66, 67. Because where in the hell was I going? I wasn't flying in airplanes. I have this thing, and I can't explain it to you, and I'm not trying to impress my family in Pennsylvania, in Pittsburgh. But I have a thing for being able to spot talent. I mean, I don't know what else to say, because if you follow up one more minute, I go to LeBron, I go to Tracy McGrady, and I also go to, Kobe. I know there's a thing inside of all of us that we're pretty good at that we don't know we're pretty good at. I certainly didn't know it was going to be basketball players.
Yeah, honestly, your eye is so great for it. And part of what makes Air so special, again, I want everyone to check it out, Amazon Prime, May 12th. I saw it in theaters. Couldn't wait to see it. It lived up to the hype, and it's really done well at the box office, which is nice to see. A movie like that with those kind of stars getting some recognition. But that speech you give, so great, the movie. I mean, I get the hairs in the back of my neck tingling when you say to Phil Knight, as you're pitching Jordan, okay, stop the tape, and you give him this great speech about how, you're a can't miss. You're Michael Jordan. Like, they're going to build you up, but they're also going to tear you down. And Affleck really does it beautifully. He starts intermixing moments of Jordan's real life. Again, I'm sure you don't remember that speech word for word, but what do you remember about what you said to Jordan in that moment?
Basically, what Mrs. Jordan said after Viola goes in, and, after I'm done, and she gives a State of the Union thing there. But what Matt did, now, I like to speak, and I've spoken all my camp for like 50 years. I go around to colleges, 50, 60 colleges, but I'm sure I did not say the State of the Union, Gettysburg Address thing, friends roaming the country. That did not come out of my mouth in 1984. But something did, which allowed Matt Damon to improvise and say a speech. We were at the premiere and we see it and all the people there. And I wanted to get up and go, yeah, because everybody looked at Pam and I that night. And then Viola follows up. And when she says, it's just a shoe till my son puts his, foot in it. I mean, these are great actors. Now, I wish I could have exaggerated. Maybe Sonny really did that. I didn't make a speech. That was the circumstances. And Phil really, really, that scene where he was like befuddled and, he got to pay the fine and all that. Till the very last, we didn't know. Well, when they came there, we sort of knew if they signed a contract, we'd get them. But, he was dubious. This was the last will and testament, if you just want to believe me on this. We only had that much money. We couldn't afford to, mispay this kid. Everything rode on it, and history changed because Phil Knight gave okay. Rob Strasser stayed with it, and Peter Moore designed a shoe that will never, ever be forgotten.
And it's a great scene, too, afterwards where, after Viola, Mrs. Jordan is saying, hey, he's insisting on getting a percentage of the shoe, right? This is the way it's going to be. And Damon, you, as your character, Sonny Vaccaro, is telling Affleck's Phil Knight, I'm sorry, I tried. It's not going to work out. And then Affleck, as Phil Knight, to the audience's astonishment, and Sonny's astonishment, like, no, we'll do it. Fine, screw it. And he says something like, well, how much is it going to cost me? And the scroll shows how much the Jordan shoe is sold. Sonny, that literally, again, to your point, it changed sports and athletics forever, the fact that Mrs. Jordan insisted that her son would get a cut of the shoe.
Yeah, and that part happened. Here's what, basically, but she did know that we were making an offer, and putting things in that, and it kept, she kept beating on it because she didn't want, if you go back to the Adidas thing in that, when they wouldn't budge an inch or whatever, and Converse wouldn't budge an inch, well, you'd be satisfied. You're with Magic, you're with Bernie. If you remember those two scenes, that's what she was saying. She went to these companies. They all told her how great her son was, but she wanted to know, is we going to get what's on this contract? I mean, that's the Pittsburgh kid telling you, listen, a lot of people tell us a lot of BS here. Is this what we're going to get? Has he got a piece of this right now? So that's what Mrs. Jordan said, but that's what Viola really hit, yes.
How much research, I'm sure Ben talked to you a bunch, Matt as well, did they kind of pick your brain on certain things? Is there any details that you felt like, guys, this is really important that you get this in the story?
Well, Matt and I got very close on Zoom. Once they signed on, Pam and I agreed to it. They were going to be on it, when we were invited to be part of it. I'm a consultant. I had nothing to do with the script. I had nothing to do with the players in it, but they wanted me, Peter Guber, who owns the whole thing, said, we want your information. So Matt and I did become close, and we did everything. He listened to everything I said. He had questions about what was written. There are things that obviously happened during that period of time, too, that they omitted. What you watched in that movie was the signature time and moments, the 3-4 scenes that you saw actually happened. Matt wanted to know what I thought. Matt wanted to know, how did I get it? That's how the scene with the video started. I said, well, it all happens. I was there at the game. And a lot of people forgot even about the game, as it said. And I said, I remember that Dan Kidd making that shot. And, you know, so he improvised that. But Matt Damon, and going back to Ben, when Phil and I had that speech, I did like the game. Well, I don't gamble anymore, but I loved the gamble. I mean, I lived a lot, and Pam and I lived there, you know, when we were married and our families were, and I never backed away from that. And coming from Pittsburgh in the 50s, that was sort of like inherited in you, right? You know, everyone played poker or whatever. So, and if you remember that scene, you know, when he brought it to my attention, Sonny, we know you go, you know, Vegas and all that stuff. Now it's time for you to, you know, let's go. We're all in this damn thing. Those things were real. That, you know, you can't improvise. But again, it was only, what, an hour and 50 minutes, so they had a compound. But I got to know, you know, Matt pretty well. And he went on. The nicest thing, you know, and obviously, it's, you know, you're pride, and you got a little ego. We all do, right? When he went on the TV shows, like the Kimmel Show and all that stuff, he'd bring up my name. He'd bring up saying something nice. And Viola would always bring up Mr. Jordan. And that sort of makes you feel good when you got relatives all over, right? And then they're going to watch the movie, and they know that that's it. But he's a good man. Just a good thing. He's a great basketball fan. The first thing he told me, the first 5 minutes of our conversation on Zoom, Matt Damon said to me, Sonny, I want you to know, I grew up 5.5 blocks from Patrick Ewing, and I went to Ridge Latin High School, which he's younger than Patrick, obviously, which Patrick went to. And he said, and I was a great Georgetown Hoya fan. What he told me, and he said, now I live and die the Celtics. He come right out and put it right to me. Now, I'm a basketball fan, and so has Ben. And that helped a lot. They sort of got the feeling for who Sonny Vaccaro was.
That's a great point. Sometimes you see actors playing athletes or in that world, and you can tell they really don't know it that well. But if these guys are genuine fans, which you're right, I've heard Matt and Ben speak about, they're genuine sports fans and genuine basketball fans. So I love that he shared that with you. How nice was Phil Knight's purple Porsche?
You know what? I don't remember. But I do tell you, I do know one thing. He had a beautiful, I was there for 9 or 10 years. He had a beautiful car. I thought one of them was an Italian car that obviously, he always had a beautiful car. And I can't tell you that, but I'm sure that's what it was because they wouldn't have put it in. And it was beautiful. In fact, let's be very honest. Phil could buy the whole company now, so you don't have to worry about just wanting a lot.
Well, I think ultimately Air is a great film, and it's important in many ways. It's about commercialization. It's about athletes recognizing their worth. It's about class structure. It's about race. But it's also really about friendship. And I think the story of Sonny Vaccaro and Phil Knight as told by Air is really beautiful. And I love that scene where, you know, your character, Damon, kind of says to Phil, like, hey, I had no other chance. Like, thanks for believing in me. He's like, no, of course. Like, you're the man. Like, how important was Phil's trust in you?
Well, he was obstinate the whole way. He was doubtful. He was betting his company on the darn thing. So from the first day when they wanted to take three people or two people, he wanted to hedge his bet also. He said, well, why are we listening to Sonny? I really wasn't involved with the pros. I mean, at that time, I was involved with colleges. So every step of the way, when I first had my first meeting, Phil had another question. But at the end, just so you understand, he said yes to it. When we got there, he said yes. And another thing, just to tell the Pittsburgh audience, Phil Knight and his wife went to Pam and I's wedding in Las Vegas. Rob Strausser and his wife was there. You know, Howard Schlesinger, who was part of that thing, you know, at my wedding. And George Raveling was my best man. So when you go back and look at history, these people are all in the movie. So there was a camaraderie. And, you know, in the 9 or 10 years that, you know, Pam and I traveled the world with Michael, we obviously got to know the Jordan family. That first 3 or 4 months, I didn't know anybody. I was a virgin in the whole society there that the Jordans had. But as life went on for those years, Michael and I were still at Nike, we are the closest. I mean, you can't be any closer than staying at someone's home and traveling to Europe with them.
It's an amazing story. It's an amazing movie. And Sonny Vaccaro has lived an amazing life. Make sure you catch Air on Amazon on May 12th. Sonny, thank you so much for the stories. Like I said, we could just talk basketball all day. We're talking about the movie specifically. But I have such respect for you and what you've stood for and taking on the NCAA and sticking up for players and making sure that guys get what they deserve. So great stuff, Sonny. We appreciate you.
Well, I'm going to hold you to that. When this is all said and done, the pro player thing is over. We ought to talk about NILs sometime. Okay? All right? Let's get rid of the NCAA, and then I can go wherever I'm going peacefully.
Sounds good, Sonny. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. God bless.
Thanks once again to Sonny Vaccaro. Hopefully you catch the double dip on MLB Network as well. Kingpin. I think it's one of the best comedies of the 90s. A star bowler whose career was prematurely cut off hopes to ride a new prodigy to success and riches. It's from the Farrelly Brothers, and the reason I wanted to do it was Woody Harrelson had a reunion with Bobby Farrelly. They had a movie that came out called Champions. It came out early March. I didn't see it. We tried to get Woody for the podcast. Didn't happen. So I said, you know, that's kind of cool. He was reuniting with the Farrellys because I don't think that Kingpin gets enough love. If you mention the Farrelly Brothers, it's always just something about Mary, which is a massive hit and I think an outstanding movie. And I believe William Goldwyn, the celebrated screenwriter, said it should have been nominated for Best Picture. And I'm with you. Like, comedies never get enough love. There's something about Mary is a great comedy. But Kingpin, to me, is also a fantastic movie, and it features just a fantastic cast. We kick it off first, Woody Harrelson playing Roy Munson. Just think of the catchphrase, you got Munsoned, which means you're, you know, basically a loser. Randy Quaid, before he went crazy, he's playing Ishmael, who's the sidekick, dopey, goofy, tall, Amish. Bill Murray, who we'll get to in a second, is Ernie McCracken. For a role that he's maybe in it like 18 minutes, to me, it's a singular Bill Murray performance. He's so funny. Chris Elliott, who, of course, the Farrellys love, also from the Something About Mary, I think he played Woogie was his name. Vanessa Angel, hello, playing Claudia, the scene where she opens the freezer. I'm like, hello.
Hello.
And then you've got a series of other actors as well. But I want Chris to take the lead with this. I just want to start by saying, fantastic cast and just a really funny premise.
Great,
if someone says to me, what's the idea? It's a bowler with a prosthetic hand. I'm already in.
Great cast, like you said, Roger Clemens.
Yeah.
It's such a random cameo, Roger Clemens in that movie. But it's just great lines, man. Like, just so many funny random lines. Bill Murray, I mean, like, we talked about it last week. Hi. He's, like, trying to hit on a woman. Hi. No, not you.
No, not you.
Not you. Hi. And then he tells the waitress, can you remove that perfume before you come back? Like, just subtle, just little shots. And then Roy Munson's...
the landlord, yeah.
The teeth.
Oh.
And then just, like, so they have a scene where he owes her money for rent. They have sex. It's like, okay, he's going to pay his debts this way. So it's the classic, she's smoking a cigarette in bed. He's over by the toilet, literally barfing because of how terrible it was. So you get the picture is painted. Right. And then it's like, all right, this scene, I get it. But then great line by the lady. What is it about good sex that makes you have to take a crap? Like, just such a great line that puts, like, the cherry on top for that scene of, like, okay, I want to throw up now.
Oh, you're right. It's a revolting
Someone
scene.
He jacked off a bull at one point.
Yeah, well, that scene was great because he's with the cow. And he goes, oh, I've just been milking this guy. We don't have a cow. We do have a bull, though. He's throwing up from the pail. How about the scene with Chris Elliott basically playing Robert Redford in Indecent Proposal when he says, I'll give you $1 million to sleep with your friend. Except in this case, he's not talking about Demi Moore. Although it is funny because it's Woody Harrelson, who was also in Indecent Proposal.
Yeah.
He's talking about Randy Quaid.
Yeah.
Randy Quaid just taking it up. Like, it's just disgusting to see him crying. Woody Harrelson's throwing the money up in the air.
Oh, but back to your point about Bill Murray. Bill Murray as, like, the arrogant professional that's better than, like, that is just such a perfect role for him of, like, I'm the bowler in town here, like, and it's just, like, such a sad back in that day. It's not like they're big, like, it's like local, it's like, you know what I mean, he's like walking around like he's LeBron James, but he's just built like he's just some crappy professional bowler.
But that's a great point about Bill Murray, like, he plays that snide arrogance to a T. Like, it's just so funny and
it's
so perfect.
So funny, man.
Kingpin, fantastic movie. If you've ever seen it, hopefully we didn't ruin it too much for you, but it's got plenty of belly laughs.
Where's Bill been, man?
I know.
I need more Bill.
He was doing a movie with Aziz Ansari, and then apparently got accused of some sexual misconduct, and then like, movie got shut down. So
he got canceled?
Damn. Yeah, maybe. It's a long way of saying.
Another one bites the dust.
I was about to say, Google Bill Murray, Aziz Ansari. Like, yeah. The killer there is it's not only that Bill Murray got in trouble, but like the movie got shut down. Like, imagine we're working on a movie and I'm screwing around. You come to me and go, hey, Adnan, I'm sorry. You're acting improperly. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, Cody. Like, it's okay. You're fired. Like, I got it. But like, the whole movie got shut down.
Yeah.
Like, imagine the whole Levitar show is canceled because, like, you know, Billy does something stupid. Like, no, wait, what the hell? We still want to make the movie. Just get Bill out of here. But It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Here's some blurbs for you. Jonathan Rosenbaum, Chicago Reader. This bad taste comedy about bowling champs from the dudes who brought you Dumb and Dumber decides to go scummy and scummier by blatantly ripping off several scenes. A terrible review. What the hell is Rosenbaum talking about? Roger Ebert, come on. Some of the gags don't work, and I laughed at the Farrelly's audacity in trying them. The humor isn't just gags and punchlines, but one accomplished comic performance after another. Ebert nailed it. And Mike Clark.
It wasn't a very, like, Rotten Tomatoes, not great.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it's a great comedy. I'm telling you. One of the best in the 90s. Mike Clark, USA Today. With maybe 25 belly laughs, the brazenly crude Kingpin is often uproarious, but be forewarned that its creators apparently conceived it underneath a limbo bar. How low can a funny guilty pleasure go? I'm going to double check. I think Gene Siskel had it in his top 10 that year. Like, he loves Kingpin.
It's 49% tomato meter and 69 audience score.
See, that's horrible. It should be 80 and 85.
Yeah. That's what Guardians comedy. Is. It's coarse. Like, it's just, yeah.
It's just disgusting. Anyways, go watch Kingpin. It's worth a great laugh. We don't have nearly enough comedies these days in the tank. Thanks, as always, for listening. Please go to Apple Podcasts, where you can subscribe, rate, and review. Again, I check those. I see a couple of insulting ones, so let's help my self-esteem. Help me and Cody out. Give some positive ones. Go to Apple Podcasts. Subscribe, rate, and review. Thank you once again to Sonny Vaccaro. He's a real champ. Next week, listen, we've had a lot of great movie stars, big names like Sonny. We're going to go back to our roots. Next week, an author.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
We're back, baby. We're back
with literacy. David Grand.
Read the shit out of that book. You're going to read the shit out of that book, aren't you, Adnan?
David Grand's the author. Why is he important? He wrote Killers of the Flower Moon, which is the new Martin Scorsese, Leonardo DiCaprio, Robert De Niro movie. It's coming out at the Cannes Film Festival later this month. We'll talk to David. I don't know how involved he was with the process. I may ask him. He might say, oh, honestly, I had nothing. They sent me a check. And Marty was like, it's been fun. But hopefully he can say he was involved a little bit. We'll find out next week. We'll all find out together. And also the new Michael J. Fox documentary. Can't wait. It's on Apple Plus this Friday. It's called Still. I heard rave reviews about it. We tried for the director, David Guggenheim. We got refused. Obviously, we're not going to get Michael J. Fox, but I can't wait to watch it. Apple Plus. It's called Still. And until then, I'll see you at the movies.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.